The FBI swatting and the arrest of a Catholic pro-life leader sent a clear message to the pro-life community. The government wants us to be silent. How are we going to respond? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, I just want to encourage people to smash that like button and to subscribe to the channel, but don't notify. Also, you can follow us on various social media at Crisis Mag. Okay, let's get right into it. So most people probably have heard this story by now. I'm recording this on Tuesday, the 27th. But last Friday, the 23rd, I'm going to read some of this from an article from our friends over at LifeSite News. I think they were the first to break this story, and they first interviewed the wife of the man who was arrested. It says, a well-known pro-life author, sidewalk counselor, and father of seven was the latest victim of a U.S. Department of Justice-sponsored SWAT raid and arrest for supposed FACE Act violations at his rural home and his children looked on screaming. Mark Houck is the founder and president of the Kingsmen, which promotes healing for victims of pornography addiction and promotes Christian virtues among men in the United States and Europe. Yeah, that's the type of guy we really want the government going after, isn't it? So Ryan Marie, who's a homeschooling mother, this is his wife, describes how the SWAT team of 25 to 30 FBI agents swarmed their property with around 15 vehicles at 7:05 a.m. on Friday morning. Having quickly surrounded the house with rifles in firing position, they started pounding on the door and yelling for us to open it. So the article continues over at LifeSite News about this, how basically they were they treated him as if he were Osama bin Laden, essentially. So the warrant charge that they used charged Mark with violating the Freedom of Access to Clinics Entrance Act, which is another name for FACE, due to a claimed attack of a patient escort. So what happened is, the charge stems from an incident that had already been thrown out of district court in Philadelphia, was somehow picked up by Merrick Garland's Department of Justice. On several occasions, when Houck went to sidewalk counsel last year in Philadelphia, he took his eldest son, who was only 12 at the time. For weeks and weeks, a pro-abortion protester would speak to the boy saying crude, inappropriate, and disgusting things. I'm not going to repeat exactly some of the things he said, and other statements that were too vulgar for her to convey. Repeatedly, Houck would tell this pro-abortion man that he did not have permission to speak to his son and please refrain from doing so. He kept doing it and kind of came into his son's personal space, obscenely ridiculing his father. At this point, Mark shoved him away from his child and the guy fell back. So essentially this is, you know, he didn't have any injuries or anything, but he tried to sue Mark. So essentially what happened is we have a Catholic pro-life father of seven, takes his son to the abortion clinic to pray to sidewalk counsel, as every good Catholic pro-life father should do, at least on some occasions. And a pro-abort basically targeted his son, his young son. And as somebody who has been at abortion clinics, in front of abortion clinics before, with pro-aborts present, this is not surprising at all. It's not surprising to see, say obscene and vulgar things to him. I've heard some of the worst things I've ever heard in my life were heard in front of an abortion clinic. Blasphemies, vulgarities. And they purposely say these things because they know we're Christians and they know we're Catholic, and so they're trying to get a rise out of us. And I totally support the idea that we should not respond to these things, that we should, in general, in most situations, we should just simply stay quiet, ignore them, and go on with what we're doing. However, there's also something to be said. As a father of seven myself, I have a duty to protect my children. I have a duty to defend them. And so if somebody is verbally assaulting my child, my son in this case, for example, I have a right and a duty to defend him. And so I just want to make it very clear. Some people were trying to argue like, well, he should have taken his son out of the situation, or he shouldn't have pushed the man or something like that. I think you're missing the entire point here. He has a right and a duty to do this. This is not some act of violence, some act of I had a video a few weeks ago about the church needing to be militant and how violence is not always wrong. Our Lord himself committed acts of violence. And so therefore, in this situation, this man did nothing wrong. And clearly, he did nothing legally wrong either, because the charges were dropped when they went to district court in Philadelphia. If there was really a case here of how actually assaulting this man or doing something terrible, there would have been a charge. You don't think the district court in Philadelphia wouldn't have gone after a conservative in this situation? Of course it would have. So obviously did nothing legally wrong. However, we don't live in a world where something, just because something isn't illegal, means we can't prosecute you for it. Because what they did was they called up the FACE Act, the Freedom Access Clinic Entrances Act. Now, I'm very familiar with this act because I remember the day it became law back in 1994. I was involved in a rescue group, had been for a few years. So we go around and we block abortion clinic doors peacefully, nonviolently. And this was very successful. Most people have heard of Operation Rescue. Randall Terry popularized it in the late 80s. Joan Andrews Bell is the saint, really, of the rescue movement. And essentially what we would do is we go to abortion clinics and we would sit in front of the doors and block access to the clinic so women could not go in to kill their babies. We'd do it nonviolently. We'd do it peacefully. We'd just sit there. And we wouldn't push anybody. We wouldn't do anything like that. We just simply sat there. And then the police would have to come take us away. And usually we would go limp and take a long time. The abortion clinic would be closed for the day. I know personally of babies that were saved because of these actions. And I also think what the rescue movement did was it unsanitized abortion. People didn't want to talk about what's going on in these clinics. But all of a sudden, it became an abortion clinic became a place that was not acceptable anymore because of what we were doing there. Well, obviously, the pro-abortion forces are not going to take that lying down. And so Congress, under President Bill Clinton, enacted the FACE Act, which basically made a federal crime to block an abortion clinic door, punishable by up to, first offense was like a year. After that was like 10 years. It could be up to 10 years. Now, here's the thing. When you rescue, I have a friend, a good friend, who spent 2.5 years in jail for rescue. I have some other very good friends who spent a year in jail. But those were isolated instances where they were repeatedly doing rescues and they got a judge who was typically a former Catholic, wanted to prove he wasn't Catholic anymore. And he'd throw the book at him. He'd find ways to increase their how long they were in jail. But typically, if you did a rescue, you would be in jail maybe a day or two, maybe a week, maybe a month. I mean, I got my wife spent a week in jail. One of my best friends spent a month in jail. You know, I usually just spend a day or so. It usually wasn't that big a deal because it's like a political protest in the eyes of the law. And so they're not going to really throw the book at you generally. Now, over time, those sentences usually got more and more. But eventually it was obvious to the pro-abortion forces that simply these punishments were not enough. Just doing a week or a day or something like that wasn't enough to keep us from doing this. And it wasn't. So that's when they enacted the FACE law, which basically said, okay, your first offense is a year in jail and a federal offense, not a local misdemeanor or something like that, a federal offense. You do it again, more time. You do it a third time, I think it was, a 10-year prison sentence in a federal penitentiary. And that overnight crushed the rescue movement. I always say it's the most effective piece of legislation in American history because it did exactly what it was intended to do, which was to stop the rescue movement cold. Because most of us, I put myself in this category too, we decided it wasn't worth it. We weren't willing to spend a year or to 10 years in jail for that. And so most of us stopped rescuing. We continue to sell counsel, pray, clinics, things like that, but we stopped doing that. But the thing about the FACE Act is, as all legislation is, it has other consequences as well. And these are intended consequences in the case of the pro-abortion forces. And so what they want to do is basically anything that any type of assault or anything that they would call assault, anything where you try to harm somebody who is a clinic defender, and usually it's just these volunteers who are just terrible people who are escorts, they call them. We call them death escorts that would lead people, the women, into the abortion clinic, protect them from us, even though we weren't ever, never were we ever trying to go after the women in any physical way, like attack them. We were trying to talk to them. That was considered an assault by their means. So it's this FACE Act that they're using against Houck to say, okay, because of the fact that he touched a pro-abortion death escort, therefore he violated the FACE Act. Clearly, that's the purpose of the FACE Act, is to make it so that pro-lifers are as subservient as possible and do nothing and don't even show up from abortion clinics. That's really the purpose of it. It wasn't just to stop rescue. It was to stop us from even going to abortion clinic to pray there to sidewalk counsel. Now, that part of it wasn't successful, and there was no ability in Congress to actually pass a law and make it you came and pray in front of an abortion clinic. Oh, that was tried. There wasn't they didn't have the votes to do that. And so what happens is now they can use this FACE Act against Houck. And I think that's the big picture we have to realize here is it's not whether or not should Houck have pushed the guy or not. I would argue he was completely within his rights legally and morally to do so. As a father, if somebody is assaulting, verbally or otherwise, assaulting your child, you have the right to take an action to make them stop. Clearly, telling the man repeatedly to stop was not working. So he did do the right thing in the sense that, okay, he's verbally assaulting my son. I will verbally tell him to stop. Now, you could argue maybe prudentially he should have taken his son away from the situation. Well, what does that tell the son? You know what tells the son? Oh, we're not going to try to save babies if some people start yelling at us. We're not going to try to save babies if we hear these things happening. And so ultimately, it sounds to me, from what we know, that Houck took the exact right steps. He first basically told him to stop, repeatedly told him to stop, and he did push him away when the man got too close. Because how does he know that this man, who was obviously antagonistic against his son, gets close to him, isn't going to physically assault him? You can't wait in that situation. If I'm at a ball game, for example, with my 12-year-old son, I don't have a 12-year-old son anymore, but let's say I have a 12-year-old son. I'm at a ball game with my 12-year-old son. And a drunk guy starts talking to my son, saying vulgar things to him. I tell him repeatedly to stop. And let's say there's no security guards around. I know that there would be at a ball game, but there wasn't at this clinic. And I have no way to stop him because he won't stop. Now, I could leave the situation. In a ball game, maybe I would do that. But I have a right, if the guy gets close to my son, to push him away. Say, no, you can't. You've now violated his space, and I believe you are a threat to my son. I'm going to push you away. I'm not trying to deck him. I'm not trying to knock him unconscious. I'm not pulling a knife on him or a gun on him. I'm just simply saying, get away. He has every right to do that. And frankly, anybody who is focused on that part of the story, you are missing everything. You are missing the entire actual story. Because here's the thing. There will always be given a reason why something happens. When a persecution happens, when the Nazis persecuted the Jews, they gave up a reason why they should do it. They tried. They made a justification for it. It always is going to be a justification no matter what. And so this is exactly what we see here is, of course, they're going to give a reason. They were like, hey, we have an opportunity here. That's what really happened. Because, again, the charges were dropped in Philadelphia at the district court. But what the Department of Justice saw was an opening. Okay, now we have a situation where we can send a message to those pesky pro-lifers who are going to abortion clinics. We want to stop them. How can we do that? Now we have our opening. What we can do is we can say this guy violated the FACE Act. That will give us the veneer of legality. And we're going to go guns a-blazing at him. And literally guns a-blazing here. Now, note, the story came out later that Houck actually, through a lawyer, contacted the FBI. Let me make sure I get this straight. He contacted the FBI and agreed to turn himself in voluntarily. This is what the Houck's attorney, the Thomas More Society Vice President and Senior Counsel, Peter Breen, said. He said he agreed months ago, Houck did, to turn himself in voluntarily, but they turned him down. So clearly this was not a case of, oh, we have a violent person out there. We need to make sure we take him in. It's not like all of a sudden somebody was holed up in his house with a bunch of guns after he had just gone a serial killing rampage. And now we got to make sure we stop him. The safety of our society, of our community is in danger. We need to take care of this guy, which is actually the only reason why you should ever have a situation where a SWAT team basically attacks a house is you feel like this person has already committed major acts of violence and you fear he will continue to commit them. And he will. And that's when you do that. You don't do it because some father of seven pushed a guy in which the local court said it wasn't even illegal. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not going to press charges. That's not why you send van fulls of FBI agents armed banging on the door to arrest a guy. We all know this. That's the thing. There's nothing like new about what I'm saying. This is just basic common sense. In any civilized society, it is obvious that this is an egregious abuse of power. And the fact that there is anybody who might argue it's not or is looking for something else in the story, you have already accepted. You are the frog in the boiling water who has already died. You've already been boiled alive if you don't see how clearly unjust this action is, that they would do this in this situation. But this is exactly how full-scale persecution happens. Now, I know a lot in the left are saying, oh, look at those conservatives again, acting like they're the Jews in Nazi Germany. And I even made the reference earlier to Jews in Nazi Germany. Here's the thing. I'm not saying we're there yet. What I am saying, though, is this is exactly how you get there. It's not like all of a sudden, overnight, Hitler was just able to say, let's kill all the Jews. There was a process that led to the Jews becoming scapegoats in German society, to Hitler rising to power, and him being able to eventually cart them off to concentration camps. That was all a process that takes time. What you do is you undermine a certain class of people or certain values, certain viewpoints over time. It starts with just mockery. Maybe there's some jokes about it on a television show or something, or Hollywood makes fun of it, something like that. And then over time, it becomes part of the culture. I mean, look at how, have you ever seen Hollywood depict a Catholic priest in a good way these days? I mean, there's maybe an example here and there, Father Stu, maybe, or something like that. But in general, what you have is a denigration of Catholic priesthood. Same thing with big families. Do you ever see a big family presented in a positive light anymore? No, we're a bunch of weirdos. We're a bunch of people who don't understand that we're killing the planet or something like that. We don't understand what is really important in life, which is me. Not giving of yourself to have a big family. Catholicism in general is ridiculed. Evangelical Christianity is ridiculed. This is exactly what happens over time, so that over time, the persecution against that group can rise. It can increase. It doesn't happen overnight. And so these actions have a twofold effect. Like the FBI doing this SWAT raid against a family man for doing nothing wrong, they have a dual effect. The first effect is send a message. Send a message to pro-lifers, to Catholics everywhere, that listen, don't get out of line. Don't go out. Don't take your views outside of your home. We'll let you for now keep them in your home, but don't go outside your home and let other people know about them. Because this could happen to you. I mean, it happened to this guy. It could happen to you. Because the next time, the pretense that they use will even be less than he happened to push a pro-abort escort away. The second message that sends is, actually, it's more like a feeler. Okay, is this something that our culture is going to accept, our society is going to accept? Is it going to be pushback? If there's not pushback, then we know, okay, we've arrived at this point. We can continue moving on in the plan program to basically silence pro-life Catholics. But if there's a massive pushback, and I'm very happy to say there has been a pretty sizable pushback, we'll see how effective it is. Then what happens is they will pull back. Okay, we're not there yet. And then they'll try it again, maybe in a year, maybe a few months, maybe in a couple of years, depends on how they read the tea leaves. And so that's exactly what is happening here, is they're testing our response. What is our response going to be? Are we going to stop going to the abortion clinic? Are we going to stop praying there? And you know for a fact, the pro-abortion forces at the clinics are now energized to harass us even more because they know this could happen. This is exactly what could happen. We could get a pro-lifer thrown in jail, get swatted and thrown in jail. I mean, this is their dream. Oh my gosh. The pro-abortion death squads at all the clinics, they are just loving this. This is their dream come true. So they're going to up their game and they're going to be harassing us even more and more. So what do? Do we stay home because we're afraid this could happen to us? That's exactly what they want to happen. That's exactly what they want to happen. So we have to decide, are we really going to stand up to this, Or are we going to just allow it to happen, allow Houck to get arrested and have to deal with it, and then we're all going to stay silent? And I think you should know what my answer is. Obviously, we're going to resist. We need to resist this. We can't be afraid. We need to continue to go to the clinics. We need to continue to see a counselor. We need to continue to pray there. Continue to be a witness for the unborn babies. If we're not there, the babies don't have a voice. And so we cannot back down. And this applies to other things beyond just the pro-life movement. We have to continue to fight against the transgender agenda. I've been very happy to hear that there have been a few. I just heard about, I don't have the details on this, but I heard it on a podcast this morning, that in Memphis, there was a big protest against a drag queen story hour. And because of that, they shut it down because they didn't feel like it would be a safe thing. Now, here's the great part of the story. This is in Tennessee. And a lot of the people who there protesting it were open carrying, which is your constitutional right. And Tennessee actually supports that constitutional right. And so they were very afraid of violence. And so they shut down the drag queen story hour. I call that a win. I call that an absolute win. And that's the type of thing we have to do. Notice there's no violence. Nobody committed any acts of violence. They just went there to protest in numbers. And they made it very clear that they were serious. And then they shut down the drag queen story hour. That's exactly the type of stuff we need to do. And yes, there will be pushback. There will be more Mark Houcks, unfortunately. And pray for Mark Houck and his family, obviously. That doesn't mean we have to stop, that we can stop doing this. I also would say is we have to be very honest about the role of the FBI and law enforcement in this. Now, most conservatives have an instinctive back the blue instinct. I will admit I have not had that instinct for 30 years. Why? Because of my work in the rescue movement. I saw how the police were weaponized against us. I saw how the whole judicial system was weaponized against us. I saw police treat peaceful pro-lifers in horrible ways. And these men are just regular policemen who would go home to their families, but they would treat us like crap. I saw judges and lawyers lie, just blatantly lie in the judicial process in order to bring about prosecution against pro-lifers. I mean, I saw it with my own eyes, heard it with my own ears. And so I lost at that moment any instinctive respect for law enforcement and in some sense that they were above us. They are not above us. They serve us. And so, yes, do I think that, yes, there are good policemen. Obviously, there are good policemen, but there are bad policemen. And ultimately, here's the thing. When it comes down to it, do you really think law enforcement will not enforce the law if the law is unjust? That's the big thing we have to know as conservatives. When the law is just, we want law enforcement to enforce it, right? Yeah, sure. We want them to enforce it, though, but only in the appropriate ways. We don't want them seeing SWAT teams, even if the person actually broke a law, if it's just a minor law. That's the militarization of the law enforcement that has been occurring now for a couple decades. What do I mean by the militarization of law enforcement? What I mean is this, is your local police force. Yes, the guy should have a gun, obviously. He should have a baton. He should be able to protect himself. But the fact is local law enforcement, they now have far more than just a guy with a gun. They basically have military grade equipment that they're using for these SWAT raids. FBI is the same thing. You could argue, well, okay, that's because of our society has gotten worse and worse. But don't you realize that when you militarize the law enforcement, you make them into an army. An army needs an enemy to attack. And when the administration is against us, which it is now, we are the enemy that it will attack. And that's exactly what happened here. There is no way any more than just maybe a couple guys, okay, they're armed, should have gone to Houck's house. Now, obviously, they shouldn't have gone to Houck's house because what he did wasn't even wrong. But let's say he did do something real, actually a little bit worse than this. Let's say he stabbed the guy with a knife or something like that. Even then, all they should have done was come to his house, say, hey, you're under arrest. This idea that we should be seeing a SWAT team, and this is increasing. The SWAT team approach to minor offenses increasing more and more. And so we have to push back against that. Conservatives have to hold law enforcement accountable. We can't simply accept the militarization of the law enforcement. And here's something I'm going to say people might not like to hear. But if you work for the FBI and you're a faithful Catholic, you probably need to reconsider your career. It might be something that you should not be doing. I have a good friend who works for the FBI, and I'd say it to his face. I just think it's something. They're clearly weaponized against America. They're clearly weaponized against America. And do you really want to be part of that? No, they're not the SS yet. They're not the Gestapo yet. But who's to say they won't be? If society, our country keeps going the direction it's going, why wouldn't the FBI become the SS at that point, or the Gestapo or something like that? It's exactly what they'll become. Or do you want to be part of that? Now, like I said, we do have to resist this. And I am happy that resistance is forming. And I do see that. I mean, it's interesting. Just this weekend, of course, there was the election of the new prime minister of Italy, Meloni. And she is a conservative. She is Catholic. She is a nationalist in the best sense of the word. So they're calling her a fascist and they're attacking her. But we're going to run an article tomorrow by Kennedy Hall talking about this. It's interesting that this is where the COVID regime really started, because obviously COVID started in China, but then Italy was the example everybody used. We don't want to become like Italy. And Italy took advantage of that and took control of everybody's life. And look what the result was. A few years later, they vote them all out and they vote for somebody who's more reasonable, a Christian, a Catholic, and somebody who's conservative. And so there are victories. We are seeing victories. And so that's the type of thing we have to do. We have to see here is we have to continue to resist. There is, I'm still convinced that the transgender movement is the real point where the left jumped the shark, where they crossed the line that they should not have crossed. And regular people finally said, hold up. They were able to hide the evil of abortion from regular people. They were able to have to hide the destructive nature of homosexual activity from regular people, call it love is love, things like that. But you can't hide if a man is a man or a woman is a woman. You just can't do that. And they're shoving it in our face and people are saying enough. And so I do think there is resistance. That is why, by the way, that is why you might say, well, how can you say good? These resistance is happening? People like Halk are getting arrested. That's proof the resistance is happening. If we were sitting back and doing nothing, a story like this would never happen. They wouldn't fight back. The fact is this is exactly how it goes down. For 50, 60 years, the left has won the culture. The left has taken over the culture. And they've won victory after victory after victory in the culture. Now they're starting to get some pushback, some real pushback. We saw it with the Dobbs decision. The Dobbs decision was huge. That was a seismic event in the culture because it was the first real victory for pro-life forces, first real pushback of 60 years of leftist takeover of the culture. We finally had a victory. And now we're saying they have a victory now in Italy. There's real victories happening, and that's they're going to start to panic, and they're going to do things like this. They're going to say, we got to shut down. You saw in Biden's speech a couple weeks ago, where he was just unhinged against the MAGA Republicans and how we have to shut them down. That's another example of how persecution happens. Full-scale persecution happens is you have to treat them like they're a danger to your country. These MAGA Republicans are a danger to your country. And then you can do anything to them. In fact, I'm sure they'll try to spin that Hauk is this MAGA Republican. He deserved what he got. So don't be disheartened is what I'm trying to say. We are getting victories. Because if we weren't getting victories, things like this wouldn't be happening. Now, more of these will happen, I'm sure, in the future. We just have to continue to fight, continue to gain victories. We will have things like this happen, like I said. But if we resist, if we're not silent, eventually we will be victorious. I really believe that. And I think we're seeing the fruits of some of those victories right now. But we're also seeing the pushback. And so let's pray for Hauk. Last I saw, they had raised almost $250,000, $250,000 for his legal defense. I think they first initially asked for like $30,000 or something like that, $250,000. That's a sign. That is a sign telling the FBI, the federal government, oh, maybe we did overstep in this case. Maybe we should pull back a little bit. Let's hope so. But $250,000. Now, I am worried that that will be taken away because I mean, it's, they didn't use GoFundMe, which is great. They use GiveSendGo, which is a Christian and better. But who's to say the FBI, PayPal, whoever they, whoever, not PayPal, but whoever payment processor GiveSendGo uses won't take that money away. I mean, I do think that's a real possibility, but let's hope that doesn't happen. So that's a great sign of resistance. So let's continue to do that. Continue to pray for the Houck family, continue to pray for the babies, obviously, and continue to pray for the overthrow of the leftist cultural regime that we're living under right now. Okay, that's it for now. I think we'll wrap it up there. Until next time, everybody, God love you.